football on off the ball?
For me, it's the midfield. I just absolutely love the blend of the midfield options that they've got there. I still think Rodri's the best six around. Pedri's sumptuous, absolute. I just love watching him.
Join in the obsession.
Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The News Round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets.
Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
The News Round on Off the Ball. This is News Talk.
Yes, welcome along to Monday night's Off the Ball. It's Mick McCarthy here with you until 10 o'clock, in for Owen Sheehan for a couple of days. Crumlin's Roberto Pico Lopez has played a starring role this evening in Cape Verde's first ever World Cup game. A huge draw for the West African island nation against the European champion, Spain. Ben Symes has been down at the watch party in Tala tonight, and he'll be with us in studio after 9 o'clock with all of the interesting stuff he's picked up there, I'm sure. We'll also have Henry Winter in with us to look back on what's been a pretty interesting first few days of the World Cup. Perhaps not as interesting, though, as the 2026 Gaelic Football Championship, but then again, I don't think much is. Shock wins for Cork and Louth this weekend have left Armagh and Donegal facing away trips to Killarney and Croke Park next week. And Ciarán Murtagh and Eamon McGee will be with us to talk about it all after 8 o'clock this evening. You can get in touch with the show, WhatsApp 087-9180-180. You can get in touch with us on YouTube or on social media at Off the Ball. Stephen Doyle is here with us tonight for the News Round. How are you, Stephen?
Yeah, fellow Kilimana man, like Roberto Lopez.
There you go,
I know you said Crumlin.
Sorry, you know.
No, you're right. You're absolutely spot on. But he's living in Kilimana these days, where I hailed from myself. So I'm sure they'll be all
so
gone.
He's living where you're from.
Yeah.
You're not living where you're from. And he's still from Crumlin. And Cape Verde, of course. Listen,
everybody's also just trying to jump on the Cape Verde bandwagon in some way or another, aren't they?
Well, Arthur called it a bit when I called them Ireland's team before 7 o'clock. I feel like I don't know what I witnessed in the office out there a few minutes ago would suggest that we're all on board.
Yeah, we're all on board. Yeah. No, I'm not criticising you. It was good.
We don't have a team in the World Cup, so we got to hold on to what we have. But I have to say, I felt tinges and probably slightly more of pride as I was watching Pico over the course of the last 90 minutes. He put in a really good performance as well.
Yeah, he was brilliant. Yeah, absolutely brilliant.
And exactly what you'd want from him, like, you know that.
It's a very stable back forward that they have there at Cape Verde, because look, they came through the qualification series with some absolutely incredible results, but a lot of that was built on a good midfield, good defence, and that back four, he plays alongside Borges, his other centre half, Lopez Cabral and Moreira, the two fullbacks. So that's been the first choice back four through the qualification series. Most of the friendly matches are now into this World Cup, so I think having that stability. And then the goalkeeper, Vozinha, tonight he pulled off some absolutely incredible saves there. So, I don't think, you know, it wasn't like one of these games where I didn't feel it was going to be like a Germany Curacao 7-1 because of the fact that Cape Verde did have a more stable team. But you did kind of feel that somehow Spain were going to try, or so were eventually going to break them down, even like a last minute kind of sucker punch, whatever. I was very surprised, though. I was saying to you out in the office there, Mick, like, Cape Verde basically gave Spain the wings. They were playing a very condensed space in between the edges of the box. And Spain didn't take those opportunities to go out wide, really. And Yamal didn't come on until the last 15 minutes. Danny Olmo came on pretty late as well. Williams as well.
Minutes to go, yeah.
So, yeah, it was a very strange approach, I thought, to the match from Spain.
Yeah, now there is talk that from Williams and Yamal in particular, they are hoping to kind of ease them into the tournament.
Yeah, of course.
They're both coming off injuries
plus, and all that.
You know, they have a group that they can get out of, and, you know, you don't want these lads playing 8 games at the end of a long season if you can avoid it. But at the same time, they'll be really disappointed with that. I suppose more on the Cape Verde side of things, at least for the time being, is, you know, I didn't expect them to be Curacao either because, you know, and it's, in fairness to Curacao, they were great for half an hour yesterday. It's not even to be belittling them in any way, but getting out of African qualifying in the way they did is harder than qualifying from CONCACAF. Like, they were always going to be a decent team and a hard out, and I don't think any African teams are getting, well, South Africa were obviously pretty poor on Thursday night, but that's the exception rather than the rule, I think, these days. Well, fair enough, African football's shite, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, look, Morocco.
I did forget about
Morocco
Tunisia. Well. Those games that happen at 3 o'clock in the morning are just so, I don't know, it's like as if they haven't happened. Even even watching the highlights seems exhausted to me or something like that. Do you know what I mean?
It is.
They're so late. Like,
I know a couple of people have made that point about the fact that there's no proper, like, a, you know, match of the day style kind of a highlight show the next morning, which you would feel like you kind of miss that.
They had that in Japan and Korea,
yeah,
didn't they?
They did. Yeah, absolutely.
It was in the evenings, though,
I think
course,
RTE did one as well, didn't they?
They did, yeah. They put it on in the evenings, I think. So obviously there's prime time, they're trying to capture the thing. It doesn't really work the other way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
The morning,
and you kind of miss that, don't you? Because the FIFA highlights package is coming out, like, they're only between 3 and 5 minutes. You don't kind of get a sense of the game or the occasion or whatever the case may be.
No. Even this morning, looking at the same thing, it was like, funny enough, the Sweden-Tunisia thing, it seems like it's a solid 2 minutes. That's what you get. You get 2 minutes to fit it in for the exact same game between, like, Ivory or Cote d'Ivoire and Ecuador. 2 minutes.
But wrongly...
Like five goals difference.
Maybe this is on myself rather than and everybody else doesn't feel this way, but, like, the psychologically, it feels less important. You know,
if it happens
like
overnight.
Sweden and Tunisia, like, you know what I mean? Oh. It's like, if I'd convince myself that was a big game if it was on at 8 o'clock. And I had to sit down and watch my World Cup game. Yeah. You know, whereas, like, I barely looked at the scorers. Like, you know what I saw? I was like, Isak scored and Jokeres scored. Oh, really interesting, right? Okay, move on. Forget you this year, even in the World Cup, but I'm going through African teams.
The angle on that one really was, wasn't it? Like, Sweden didn't win a match in qualification, and there they are now pumping Tunisia by 5-1. That old other interesting story of Yassine Ayari getting 2 of the goals. And the first thing I saw on social media this morning was, like, some people having a go at this guy for his non-celebration of the goals against Tunisia. And then other people biting back saying, this guy his dad is from Tunisia and said that you should play for Sweden to thank them for how they gave us refuge when we came here whenever it was. And still you have people criticising the guy for non-celebration, which is totally understandable for him in that situation. You just can't win these days, can you?
I was going to say, Steve, it turns out people have just too much to say and have too much of a platform to do it. Like ourselves. So the other, just a couple of other things happened at the weekend. I was actually away, and it's World Cup related in its own way, and I will talk about it in a minute. But as I was coming back, plane landed in Dublin, I turned on my phone. Initially, there was actually nothing. So it was like, it was the moment, like, it couldn't have been timed better. It's not as if these have been waiting here. But I got 4 texts within a couple of seconds that all just kind of had variations of loud and 4 or 6 exclamation marks. And the reason for that was, there was a pretty dramatic finish in the end of Loud versus Armagh.
Fair goalkeeper goes up, back in, it's in over the back of the net, it's in, oh, it's in, he's knocked it in, oh, goal for Loud, and Armagh, it's Conan McCall, I think, unbelievable, the long ball, locked in, and Conan McCall, there is the winner, and Loud have into the All-Ireland quarter-final. Samuel Roy played the long one in, the final touch came in it, I think it was Conan McCall. Oh, look at the scenes here on the pitch.
Oh,
Loud have won
another jet. LMFM calling Loud's unbelievable win. Of course, it didn't take any touch. There was nobody. McCall wasn't inside. It was just an unfortunate mistake from Ethan Rafferty that led to the goal. But what a way to kind of just, like, an unbelievable wrap-up to any game of football. But, like, for a kind of a overly long two-point shot as we're coming down to the hooter, as people may or may not have known when the hooter was coming, as it's slightly different on TV than it is in the ground, and actually defended quite well, so much so that Mulroy has to take a snapshot from over 50 metres, which is why it doesn't go over the bar and force extra time and puts a keeper in a position to make a mistake, and then it's a goal, and then the hooter goes, you can't even hear it, you don't really know what's going on. It's just like, all of a sudden, Armagh are beaten. And you're like, whoa. As well as Loud played, I don't know if we saw that coming.
No. It was dramatic, right? But the more I'm thinking about it, there's something unsatisfying about it.
And about I'm not not getting a full-time whistle.
No. Just the nature of it. I know that's a silly thing to say, but like, it isn't like, if it had been a one-point game and he nailed a two-pointer, right?
Yeah.
Amazing. Unbelievable way to win it. Even the fact you'd be going for the two-pointer. But it's the fact that it was such, I feel it's gotten looked over a little bit, and I do appreciate it because you don't want to nail the guy. But like, it was a pretty egregious error.
Yeah.
Like, it was a remark. Like, he didn't shoot for goal. Do you know what I mean? Like, he shot and it went in the goal.
Of course, yeah, yeah.
And I just feel part of it with that is like, that's the only thing that's like, it's dramatic, it's amazing, but it's like, that to me is just a slight tinge off of the unsatisfying part. It was a freak event, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Which doesn't take away from it, but I'm worried then, you know, that thing where you're like, right, so because of that, now we're going to have one of Kerry and Armagh going to be gone, right? So you go like, okay, I don't know where the quarterfinals will be. Will they all be in Croke Park or will they still be in neutral grounds or wherever it is? It's like, so whatever way that goes, are you then going to have, by virtue of that, a weaker end to the championship? I know it's a lot to extrapolate from a moment, and it was an amazing moment. Everything is class, amazing for Loud. But I just feel like it was one of those things where it's like, there's a look element to this that might...
Yeah.
Hamper things down the line.
It's a look element that comes from Loud, you know, with using a kind of created, manufactured home advantage, playing the game in a scheme, living with Armagh, who are probably a better team than them, and playing brilliantly at times.
For sure.
And, you know, probably maybe getting that little bit of luck because they were within 2 points and that's how they could get that luck. I know where you're coming from and I see what you mean. But every round of this championship so far, Steve-O, has offered us new drama and new quality. And we might be at a point where there's no great teams or, you know, so teams have come up to such a level and the rules suit it for the games to be close. There's no reason to think that later in the championship, if we're talking about Louds and Corks and so on in semi-finals, that, you know, in the past, maybe someone could go on a run, a Fermanagh or someone like that, or Tipperary a couple of times to a semi-final. And that was a great story, but it kind of ruined the semi-final.
Yeah.
I'm not sure any of these teams that are left in the championship are going to, it's going to be a fait accompli that they will lose their next game.
Maybe, but we did have, like, there was equal optimism last year. So if you go back to last year, obviously the quarterfinals were Kerry come alive and it was two dud semi-finals. Meath were beaten out the door by Donegal, certainly by the second half. Like, it was over long before it was over. And similarly, it was a tighter game, but Kerry were pretty dominant over Tyrone.
Yeah.
So like, I don't think it's impossible. I don't, like, I know what you're saying, like, but I think a full complement to Kerry are no worse than they were last year. They've not got worse, you know what I mean? Like, there'd be no, why would that happen? So but maybe.
Your kind of broader picture thing is more that the fact that our man Kerry now, one is going to knock out the other, and it would be better if both of those are still alive.
I think so.
Week after next.
And like, it'll be class, but like, it will be, I just wonder, is it one of those things where it's like, it's very hard to give out about it, because it'll be great, it'll be an amazing match, I can't wait for it. But it is just one of those things where it's like, you know, where we might end up, because I don't think a lot of teams could live with Kerry and Croke Park, irrespective of whether they can live with them wherever else.
Find form, which they did last year, you know, and they're saying
they hockey
Galway, funny enough, are going the opposite way they normally do, in that they're picking up bodies as they go on as opposed to losing them. Kerry are very much at the same point they were last year, where they just were ravaged earlier in the season and they're gradually getting fitter and fitter. And when it happened last year, and obviously, like, Paddy Clifford and Sean O'Shea came alive in the quarterfinal against Armagh. Sean O'Shea won't be there this week. It looks like, again, you wouldn't know, but it doesn't seem like he's going to be ready. And they were hammered the last time they were in Killarney. So it's, I don't know, I'd be worried. It's funny, because Armagh happened yesterday and Kerry won easily on Saturday night, the fear factor about that draw seems to be coming from the Armagh side in the way we're analysing it. Mm. I think Kerry would be devastated with that draw.
I don't think they
want an Armagh coming down either. Like, no. You know, they'll be happy to be at home for sure. But it's just like, the journey matters as much as the destination, I think.
Okay.
And I think we've had just consistently brilliant weekends. So brilliant games or brilliant brilliant results and sometimes both.
Yeah.
Like I'd say Cork Donegal wasn't on TV, obviously, but it felt like more of a brilliant result and a great story than it did a brilliant game. So I don't know. I have to say I'm being evangelical about football at the moment. I've never known it to be as good. We used to get. Do you remember? It's funny I say about like landing on a plane. The only time I can ever remember things being as exciting as that was, I was away for a weekend in 2014, and we'd watched a Mayo Kerry replay in the Gaelic grounds, the Mayo Mick game. And the previous week in Croke Park, I honestly thought it was the best game of football I've ever seen. And then obviously it was equally as good, or some, you know, equally as dramatic anyway, in the Gaelic grounds. And then on the Sunday, I landed to texts about Dublin taking care of business against Donegal. I think they were 9-2 up or something like that. And by the time we got through passport and everything like that and out into the bar in the airport, Donegal were winning. And obviously this was the last time that Dublin would lose under Jim Gavin in the championship and so on. But the difference there was that we're the All-Ireland semi-finals. And that used to happen a lot. We used to say, oh, we've these great semi-finals and finals. But the year getting up to them would be terrible.
Yeah.
And it would be terrible. And there'd be teams way better than other teams. And the actual football itself was drudgery. It only when it came alive is when, like, a Mayo and a Kerry met each other in certain form, and they both happened to be going for it on the same day. And it used to tend to happen in the semi-finals, and then the Dublin Mayo finals as well in 16 and 17. But we were getting 1 to 3 good games a year, whereas now we're getting 1 to 3 good games a week. Like,
it is
a different game.
Yeah, absolutely. The only thing, just go back to your Kerry point, Fitzgerald Stadium. Last time they played there was Donegal, an Ulster team. Didn't go too well. So I would imagine they would be hoping that they're going to be a little bit better prepared this time around. But then can Armagh look at that Donegal performance and maybe take a few little pointers from there? Last time I remember landing in an airplane and opening my phone to check out a very important result was when Denmark absolutely pumped Ireland at the Aviva Stadium. I took off when the teams...
Take back off again.
The teams were just announced. I was like, oh my God. Oh, jeez. Yeah, that wasn't there.
Thanks for that, Steve. We're feeling great about Cape Verde launching our World Cup and you bring us back to that grim night in Lansdowne Road. Okay, the reason I was away was decided to go away with friends to Edinburgh at the weekend because...
Ah, what a city.
Scotland, what a city, by the way, yeah. God, your calves and your hamstrings would be in shape after it, I'll tell you that much for nothing. My God, that is steps and hills. That's what that city is.
So were you there? Did you go watch Haiti or anything like that?
Well, I would say, given where we were, it was more watching Scotland than it was Haiti, but... Yeah. Yeah, we did. We went out. It was a 2 a.m. kickoff, as people know, on Saturday night, which was our second day there. But I have to say, being around a place where the World Cup is happening and in a country where it's not as a given as it would be, say, going to London or something this weekend, you know, or next weekend, was a really, really great experience and something I'm really happy I did. It's like, okay, grand, I wasn't like at the World Cup, but I actually feel like I've experienced the World Cup in a way that I won't in Ireland. Yeah. And I've done that here sometimes as well. I've gone to remember Breakford Border, which used to be near us here before it closed down, was like a place where all the Brazilians would go.
Yeah.
So in the 2014 World Cup, we used to go there for all the Brazil games and stuff like that. And that's a nice atmosphere. But actually being in the place and, look, it wasn't easy to get in somewhere. So we were in like a sports bar from like 9 o'clock. Having been out all day.
like turning up at 11 o'clock in the morning for a 4 p.m.
Do you want me to tell you what happened in the game again?
Yeah, well, don't ask me any tactical questions. But I will tell you about atmosphere questions. And it was Brazil was on in the hour before the game. Then they were playing, like there was some live music that started off with kind of like get everybody going, kind of like rock music, rock and roll, and like 50s rock, everything, but ended up in kind of like the Proclaimers, Caledonia.
Can't go wrong.
To say that I was as Scottish as Walker Shortbread by the time that game kicked off. But when the crowd were left to their own devices, there was only two songs being sang. That was No Scotland, No Party. That's fine. Anyone can do that. But the other one.
Flower Scotland.
Super John McGinn.
Ah,
that was all anybody wanted to see. Ah. It was nonstop, and that was long before he scored. And to be honest, at that stage, all I had left of me was I just wanted to hang around for Flower Scotland.
Yeah.
And people will have seen it on TV how amazing it was in Boston. But it was incredible live in that bar as well, I have to say. And again, I really just do feel like I've experienced the World Cup. And I'm actually quite grateful for it but mainly I'm just jealous.
Do you want the big measure of how emotional that Flower Scotland rendition was? Steve Clarke looked emotional. Like,
he's not an emotional man.
One of the most dry, and I don't mean this, I think Steve Clarke is a really brilliant coach, and he comes across as a really lovely fella. He's made some, big statements in the past on certain issues that have been going on. He comes across a really good guy, but he doesn't show his emotion ever. Like, never. He's one of the most stoic people you could ever come across. And even he looked emotional as those, it must have been 40,000 Scots, was it, in New Jersey?
They said that there's 40,000 over there anyway. It was in Boston, wasn't it?
Boston.
Foxborough.
And just, I was getting, it was hair stand up at the back of your neck moment. It was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I'm very, very bloody jealous.
That's the thing. That's what I was ultimately getting to. As much as I enjoyed it, and we had good time kind of rising Hearts fans by going around singing Sunshine and Leith all weekend, let's face it. Probably not the most enjoyable people to be around, I would say, but I had fun. As much as I feel like I experienced a little bit of it all immediately always turned to a super jealousy. Like, it was just like, we need this. This, and I really do mean that. And I don't mean it's like for people of age or anything like that. It's just like, we have had Euros, and that's great. And they were good fun. 2016 was good fun. 2012, the build-up was good for 2012. But 2016 was good fun. But it's not the same.
Yeah.
It's not the same as World Cup. And by the way, the middle of the night thing has something to be said for it. Not great for us watching as neutrals, but if it's your team.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. And listen, the next World Cup will be... We need to qualify for the next World Cup so we don't... experience a wait as long as Scotland's, because they were 98 was their last qualification, so 02 was our last one, so we need to qualify for the next one to match that space of time. So, and Spain, Portugal, Morocco definitely seems a bit more doable, doesn't it, than the USA,
it does,
than Mexico.
We'll probably end up getting the Argentina and Uruguay games though, will we, if we qualify.
Well, Buenos Aires, here we
come. I wouldn't mind it. Let's go.
Montevideo.
RT are currently showing the Sweden-Tunisia goals there, if anybody wants to. Only in this office, of course. Don't be turning us off.
Yeah, stick on the radio there.
Anything else to add on? How have you found Scotland's experience so far?
I always like Scotland. I've never had any issue with Scotland, so I was glad for it. There's a familiarity to it. So I watched a lot of the build-up on BBC at night, because I don't think RT were doing it.
One of my friends thought that the pundit, whose name I didn't catch because, again, there was no sound on, was Kate Middleton, who had been doing...
No.
It looked a little bit like her, but I thought it's strange that she was doing punditry on BBC for
the princess.
Scotland versus Haiti.
Well, I suppose there is the Villa connection there, isn't there?
That's what I think.
Oh, God.
He was wrong. He was wrong. He was adamant, but very wrong.
And her astute Scott Brown. I was delighted for him. I watched only the first half. I was like, I can't be staying up longer than this. But Haiti looked a lot better than I sort of thought. That's like, they're okay too. It was good for him,
But given Brazil, given Brazil's performance, who knows what's going to happen in that group?
Disgrace. They were absolute disgrace. Like, they really were. They were just.
I wasn't fishing for that comment.
They were
absolutely.
Like, I couldn't believe in the first half how bad they were, and Casemiro, it looked like. We all know, you mentioned Euro 2012, the Spain game. It didn't go well for Ireland. And it did look like that Irish midfield playing against, at times against Spain, when Brazil were taking on Morocco in that first half. Casemiro was just, I don't want to write someone off, but he did look like a busted flush in that match. He just had no legs whatsoever. He couldn't run. And it wasn't a surprise to see Fabinho coming on at half time. And that's a huge, that was a big move by Ancelotti in more ways than one, because Casemiro is his buddy. You know, the two of those have a really close relationship. That's, I think, really what kind of got him into the squad in a way. but they were just so poor. Thiago, like, he was almost anonymous in the game. I don't think so, no. Their back four, Gabriel, was shocking. Like, he was just so poor. You could have driven a bus between the two centre-halves for the Morocco goal. And then there was, like, some absolutely brilliant performance in the Morocco team. The one that really stood out for me was Mazraoui. I thought Mazraoui was brilliant, both defensively. I think he might have got beaten once on that left side, but not just his defensive performance was excellent, but it was also those diagonal runs he was making into midfield that were really key to releasing the Morocco attackers down that right-hand side. He was just sensational. Now, you know, I was going to say about Manchester, you know, let's not get into the Premier League stuff. No. I won't.
No.
Let's stick to the World
Cup. I'm cutting you off there.
But Alisson, yeah, did he probably didn't look, you know, 100%.
It was a draw, though. Like, you know.
Yeah, no,
it's a good
it
result and a bad performance. Yeah, I actually think even before the game, I always thought it would draw a fine result for them.
But
there.
The thing for Brazil, the problem for them is that they don't really have any midfielders in that squad. You know, he went all out on defenders and attackers, and that could come back to haunt Don Carlo.
I must say as well. Bring in Ederson, didn't he?
Yeah. Sorry, 31 degrees.
Emerson.
And he's in a beautifully tailored suit with the cardigan underneath.
I know.
And he looked absolutely phenomenal. What a man. But sorry, Arthur.
Just wear a shirt. Maybe he has Camacho arms, does he? And that's.
And he drinks so much espresso as well. Like, it's just,
Okay, we're going to take a break before we get into this. A couple of WhatsApps on the Spain and Cape Verde game. Spain played as if a goal was inevitable, practically walking the ball out of their half to the bitter end, smacked of arrogance, says John in Limerick. Dermot on YouTube says, only got in from work to catch the last 15 minutes of the game, and that was some block by Lopez in the last minutes. Mm-hmm. Delighted for him in Cape Verde. Spanish never start a tournament well either, which is probably fair enough as well. Don't forget Argentina lost to Saudi Arabia in their first match 4 years ago. Go on loud, great result for the wee county, says Patrick. And Martin saying, Dublin are the only county blocked from playing in their own ground. Okay, for Louth to drag Armagh to a 7,000 capacity ground in Monaghan instead of the main ground. On one rule for them and another for the Dubs.
Yeah,
what's new, says Martin and Clonsilla. We might get back to that when we go through Stephen's
Hard news round.
Anyway, the news round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 1 50 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation. We'll be back with the rest of Steve-O's news round. In fact, all of Steve-O's news round after the break.
The news round on Off the Ball.
Okay, Steve, why don't you tell us what's happening in the world?
Well,
half an hour into the show.
Indeed, Shamrock Rovers defender Roberto Lopez became the first active League of Ireland player to play at a World Cup this evening. He started in that very familiar Cape Verde back four for their group opener this afternoon. And of course, the challenges don't come any tougher than reigning European champion Spain. And while they played in Atlanta, the scenes were more reminiscent of the Siege of the Alamo in Texas. Pico Lopez and Cape Verde teammates frustrating the European champions in the first half and the second then as well to maintain their clean sheet, a finish scoreless after the 90 minutes. And as our texter said before the break, brilliant performance from Lopez and some very important blocks as well. Their Group H opponents, Saudi Arabia and Uruguay, will meet in Miami at 11 o'clock this evening. Before that, at 8 o'clock, Belgium and Egypt will square off in Group G. A Belgian playmaker, Kevin De Bruyne, is expected to start that game. The Napoli clubman turns 35 before the end of this month. And he's done it all, of course, in a long career. 6 league titles in England, 2 FA Cups and the Champions League with Manchester City, as well as other medals for Genk, Wolfsburg and his current club. De Bruyne explained what it means to represent his country at a fourth World Cup at this stage of his career.
I think it's cool. I think I'm probably at the moment in my career where I can maybe enjoy it more. Where I think when you're younger, the only thing you want to do is just play football and not really be busy with the outside. But I think now I can have I feel like a better reflection of what it means to I think also represent your country for the fourth time. And you know, it's an honor for me to still be here after playing for the national team for about 16 years. So that means that I've done something good, and you know, I'm hopefully I can play a good tournament and do something well for Belgium.
Yeah, we've got it's kind of like the old man's World Cup in so many ways, and it's like De Bruyne versus Salah tonight is the game we're going to be keeping an eye on during the show, and I'm all for it, I have to say.
He mentioned their two children went to the same school, De Bruyne and Salah, so they'd be good pals off the pitch. Rivals on
all
it.
Of those Northwest footballers basically live in the same road, don't
yeah,
they?
Yeah.
You know, they just probably, drive different ways to work every morning, you know.
Probably owned by Robbie Fowler rents out all the houses.
What's the latest on Iran then?
Touched down in Los Angeles just hours before that peace deal between the US and Iran was announced today, Mick. The squad flew from to LA from Tijuana in Mexico, where they were relocated amid an ongoing row over visas. Iran start their tournament against New Zealand at 2 a.m. Irish time. Captain Mehdi Taremi spoke to ESPN's Jeff Carlisle about how the war and questions over their own safety has affected the team's preparation.
And after the day, your brain goes there thinking about the situation in Iran, and that's unfortunately is it not good for us.
Is there fear of playing the games in the US? Are you concerned at all for your safety?
For sure we are safe. This is responsibility of the USA, and they have to do that. Why not? Very from USA, yeah?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. But you sure we are safe then?
Well, Donald Trump has said at times that he wasn't sure he could guarantee your safety, so.
But how you see us, as a politician guys, or we are a sportman?
Yeah, of course.
Trump has to see the same things.
Okay.
But we are a sport.
That's unbelievable, isn't it? Like is there something kind of incredible about a footballer talking to an American journalist and going like, "What way do you see your country?" Like that we could be brought in as for a tournament and footballers and be harmed. And that's actually being broadcast and being asked as a genuine question.
Yeah, it's genuine and says sincere as well. I don't. That's tremendously sad. Tremendously sad for us players and for the fans and for everyone else who's not kind of just caught up in the run of it. Because it's funny you talk the same thing about the Scotland point of view. It's like it's the same sensation globally. It's just being denied, like, you know, a whole
absolutely
group of people. It's shocking.
You would hope anyway, before they play, that having the news, today's news, I suppose it's come from the Trump side a few times, but the fact that it's coming from Iran as well would suggest that it's a little bit more real this time, you would say, and that at least that kind of just takes everything down a little bit before they start playing games. And by the time they play 3 games in 2 weeks, you know, it'll be normalised and so on. And it is good that they, like, whatever, I have nothing good to say about FIFA's running of this tournament or Gianni Infantino whatsoever, but, excuse me, he did say that Iran would be there. I am surprised to see Iran there, you know, given it all that happened. And it was almost a kind of a, like, let's just keep kicking this down the road until it's too close to change it. And it might have been the best strategy, to be honest.
Yeah, and, like, I just feel I really want to see Iran going out there and giving a good rattle because, as we know, the fact they've had to relocate, they've lost some, you know, backroom staff because of visa issues and all that in travelling to the USA, and that extra travelling between Mexico and America. Like, they've got to go up to Seattle, don't they, for one of their games? Like, it's just
absolutely
insane.
Today is fine. Tijuana to LA is barely a flight, but when you're starting to go to Seattle and it's the day before, that's not how you should be preparing.
No, absolutely not. So, they're in the group with Egypt and Belgium. Like, that Belgium team, like, you've got a very aging De Bruyne and some flaky players in that starting team. Egypt are a decent side, but again, you know, not exactly a great team. I'd love to see Iran getting through that group, getting into a knockout round. It'd be absolutely brilliant. It is, as Arthur says, just really terribly sad, isn't it?
We've got some non-World Cup football news today.
Indeed, Real Madrid have completed the signing of Chelsea defender Marc Cucurella. The 27-year-old makes the move in a deal that could rise to almost £52 million sterling. Cucurella is part of the Chelsea side that lifted the Europa Conference League and Club World Cup last year. Did you see the Rhys James social media post?
No.
I'm not going to say this is related to the move, but around the time that it was announced, Rhys James posted on Instagram, I think it was, saying, so we can't say for definite it's about Marc Cucurella, okay?
Yeah.
But he put out a post saying,
"What the hell is he saying?
One snake gone, one more to go."
Right. Okay.
So,
right.
Right.
I don't know
who's the other one.
Now, Reece James may keep some pet snakes at home, one of those may have been sold to, you know, another reptile enthusiast. I don't know.
Or did anyone leave the England camp today?
Well, this is another, you know, avenue that we could be looking down. But yeah, Reece James, you can check it out on.
Wow.
On the socials, if you're that way inclined. Meanwhile, Crystal Palace have appointed Lens manager Pierre Sage as head coach on a 3-year contract. The 47-year-old Frenchman replaces Oliver Glasner, who left the Eagles at the end of last season after 2.5 years in charge. Sage joined Lens 12 months ago and led them to a second-place finish in Ligue 1 and the first Coupe de France triumph in the club's 120-year history. And the biggest news, of course, of the day in football, Manchester United set to feature in the latest instalment of the Amazon series All or Nothing. The documentary is set to air next summer. Tottenham, Arsenal, and Manchester City have all featured in previous editions of the show. Cameras are due to cover the club in detail until the end of next season.
I'm not against that at all, but can I just say that, like, Michael Carrick is not going to give Jose Mourinho style moments, I don't think. But anyway, that's it. I don't want to ever let an Arthur Lightbulb moment go without being exposed. What were you going to say there?
No, I was just curious about the... It seems to have been deleted, I think, thing, or maybe it's just ran out. But anyway.
Okay, let's double check the field in the first place.
Good stuff. It is. It does seem. One more to go. Interesting. Yeah.
Okay.
I feel I know what it means.
I have to say, regardless of what people are calling people, you gotta love Florentino Perez election year, don't you? Like, it's like the World Cup is on at the moment, and like Kukrow is playing today, and he's like signing for Real Madrid. They've got Canade, they've got Bernardo Silva, someone else as well. So another big signing. They have Dumfries, don't they?
Oh, Dumfries.
So that's like in the space of like, you know, a few days, they've picked up four players, four very, like, not maybe necessarily transformative, but they've bought like, you know, three of a new back four.
Yeah. Where's Alexander-Arnold going?
Well, I don't know. Dumfries and Alexander-Arnold, neither of them are going to defend, are they? So it's like, not what I'd be replacing him for.
Cucurella, though, feels like he's in his rightful home now, isn't he? Feels like he's very suited to Real Madrid.
Okay, what else have we got?
Yeah, let's move on to Gaelic games, because Armagh, as we know, will look to avenge last year's quarter-final defeat to Kerry this weekend. The All-Ireland champions drew home advantage in round 3 of the All-Ireland series, which will see another 4 counties knocked out. That game will throw in at 4 p.m. at Fitzgerald Stadium before Mayo entertain Meath in Castlebar at 6:15. Both matches will be exclusive to GAA+. Also on Saturday, the Tailteann Cup semi-finals will be played at Croke Park. Down, we're drawn to play Fermanagh, which throws in at 3 o'clock. And at 5 o'clock, Offaly will take on Wicklow. Then we move on to Sunday, and losing finalists from last year, Donegal, will travel to the capital to play Dublin for a spot in the last 8. That will throw in a Croke Park at 1:15, and it will be on RTE, who I forgot to say are going to be showing the Tailteann Cup matches on the Saturday. And then GAA+ will show Monaghan as they host Leinster champions Westmeath in Clonus at 4 o'clock on Sunday.
We'll talk about that in a second, because it's all very worthy of conversation. But you've been done, Steve-O.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you've been done by AI Slop or by Anonymous.
Oh, no.
It doesn't appear that Reece James has done this.
And I double-check this stuff all the time. Oh,
it's impossible to never get done, let's face it. The world we live in right now.
Can't believe it. Jeez. I nearly got. Did you see the Wicklow County Board one at the weekend?
No. I'm glad I missed it.
Yeah, that was
I
just
be
like
here reporting it now.
An old man perched on a bench, basically saying the team announcement will be at 3 o'clock or something like that. And I was like, lads, I can't believe you're doing this. Perched on a bench in front of what looked like Glendalough or something like that. But it was just the old man looks like he's made out of papier-mâché or something, that weird kind of AI look, you know. Anyway, I can't believe that Reece James one got me. Yeah, there you go.
So let's go back to these these throw-in times and venues, right? So I think the big thing, and people should have known this already, it's not news to anybody, but people I still think never realise it until it happens, only one of these games will be on RTE. There are 2 hurling quarterfinals on this weekend. There's also the Tailteann Cup semi-finals on Saturday in Croke Park. So it's a busy weekend. There's 8 televised games. 3 of them, the 3 football matches are going to be on GA+. And then there's the issue of Dublin playing Croke Park. Ger Brennan was speaking to Tommy yesterday in the press conference. I'm not sure if it was when he was speaking to Tommy, actually. He was talking in the press conference and said that they would like to play, if they draw, if they get a home draw, which they did, they would like to play the game in Parnell Park. Obviously, Dublin have been very good this year in terms of some of the performances away from Croke Park, and very poor in Croke Park. Mm. So I think it's interesting. I don't necessarily think that's a CCCC or GEA decision only. I would say the Dublin County Board had probably always thought that they were going to play their home game in Croke Park, and, you know, Ger maybe saying that could have been as much asking them as it was asking the GEA. We don't really know, but I wouldn't suggest it was a kind of a case of them going against Dublin necessarily. Mm. But it is interesting that Dublin are at that point, isn't it? That they kind of want to go to, you know, we always said that it was unfair that they're in Croke Park all the time. Now it's like, yeah, you said, they don't want to be in Croke Park. Let them play somewhere else.
It's nonsense. You can't have a game of that magnitude in Parnell Park. It's like, you can say what you want. And granted, it was before the draw, but I think to your point, yeah, it says more about where Dublin are than anything else. Like,
yeah,
like it's just, it's mad.
Can you not have a game in a small venue if that venue is the proper home for a game?
It's not the proper home for a game, is it? They don't play any games, home games there of any sort of
sense. No, it's hard to argue.
You can't be playing league games in Croke Park and then go back for the biggest game of their year so far in.
Then you're deliberately keeping people out, aren't you?
Whereas
if you're playing a game in the appropriate venue and there's a scramble for tickets and everyone can't get in, you don't move that game to Croke Park or to Thurles or wherever it might be. There's an argument for that is unfair. But going the other way is also unfair. Going to a smaller venue out of nowhere
is
not the way to do things. Like,
sure, it'd be crazy. It'd be crazy for Donegal people. It'd be crazy for every... Yeah, I don't know why... I'm interested in why he would have said it. Like, what the... Because it does seem something that was never going to happen.
Mm.
So it's a great kind of red herring to throw up in the aftermath of what have been obviously a difficult few months, to then go and make a request for something that's not going to happen.
Mm.
You know it won't happen. Well, there's no chance Dublin are playing that game against whoever it is in Parnell Park. So it's a nice bit of... it's a torch paper, you know? It's just...
Like,
the only team... Or teams, maybe it would have to be a county with a smaller representation, like maybe Westmeath or Meath. I'm only joking about Meath, sorry. No, Westmeath, if Dublin had drawn Westmeath, an outside chance, maybe you get
Parnell
Park,
because they couldn't, of course.
But once they drew Donegal, there's no chance
in a knockout game. I think it would have been madness, all right, as well.
Like, sure, you're going to have 20,000 Donegal fans coming down anyway, at least. So.
Yeah.
And then plus whatever amount of Dublin fans go, neutrals. I think you're going to get 50,000 for that game Sunday.
We're going to hear from Ger Brennan in a sec. Before we do, how do you, like, I know we have a cadets calendar and I know there's, you know, no extra weeks for games and so on, but I don't understand personally how you have knockout games in two sports at this stage, last 12 in football, quarterfinal and hurling, that are going to overlap. They should, on the same day on the TV, never mind literally at the same time. So you're going to have the Monaghan-Westmeath game on GAA Plus while the Cork and Offaly game is on RTE, and you're going to have a good bit, at least the second half of what game is it? Mayo-Meath is going to go up against the Clare-Dublin game in Thurles. And it just, again, it's just backing yourself into a corner. Like, I do understand, right, take the split season argument and the giving up August, giving up September, so on. But surely when you plan the year, you plan it to have enough weeks to do what you need to do with it and then start from there.
Yeah.
So, like, what difference would the football final being on the first Sunday of August instead of the last Sunday in July really make to a calendar that then can be set from there? It's a set calendar that everybody wanted. It wasn't necessarily any specific dates. So put it at the first Sunday of August and then the championship, as it stands at the moment, runs in a way then that in the knockout stages, direct knockout stages, you wouldn't have overlapping weekends. And the Tailteann semi-finals and the hurling quarter-finals own this weekend. Everybody gets a week off in the football after everybody played this weekend. And then they go and play. And then, fair enough, they have to play back-to-back weeks after that. But that's doable. You only need to add one more weekend to the calendar. This is crazy. This is the GAA eating itself. You're already competing with a World Cup and so on, which they always have, and that's fine, but now they're competing with themselves.
Yeah, like, it's very hard. I wouldn't disagree with any part of it. I'm just trying to think. So they'll have 2 weeks from now is their quarterfinals. So they'll be going up then against the All-Ireland.
They're going, which that's another thing, is that they're going back, they're going 3 weeks in a row here as well for some of these teams, which is insane in its own way. You know, because again, there is no weeks in the calendar, because the football, it's going to be this week, then football quarterfinals next week, then the hurling semi-finals, football semi-finals, final. That's all we have left of the GAA season.
Yeah, I guess, like, it's an unfortunate scenario, I guess, whereby, I'm sure it is eminently
fixable.
There's
no other time in the year they let teams play 3 weeks in a row either. That's the other thing.
Yeah. But you can move it out. Why not? I don't know what the thing is, but I think it is.
It'll go back to the club thing, you know. And
I guess so.
Club players wanting to have that, you know, that beginning in August where they got, you know, good pitches to play on and so on and so on. And I would always go back to...
Most teams are going
to
be out well before August, you know.
Yeah,
but
look...
They have a calendar that can be flexible by 2 or 3 weeks, depending on how far your county gets in the year. It's only two counties are only affected for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, I really don't see how... You have to give enough time for the inter-county season to happen, as you've designed it. You know, like that, and that's ultimately what it is. So it's like, you can have it both ways. You absolutely can, but you have to give enough time to what you've designed.
Yeah, no, I do take that point. But like I said, we've had years of arguments about, you know, how do you give the club players as much respect and time as the inter-county players are getting? And this is what we've landed on. And I just can't see how... I do agree. I totally agree with what you're saying about this weekend. It is absolutely bananas.
You feel a little light, I think. I'm not saying that in a negative way, but I feel it would feel a little light without football this coming weekend, those two games.
Like, well, then again, they made a big thing about the Talton Cup getting it, you know, saying so.
People don't care. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'm from a county.
They might for the semi-finals if there was some focus on it, and we had to do it. That's what we had on our Wednesday night when we were looking ahead to games at the weekend. Do you know, like, and that's the other thing. It's like games are happening so fast. We've got this like massive game between Kerry and Armagh that's going to happen now next week, and it's like, all of the build-up is like, there's the URC final on Friday night, there's the World Cup all week, there's like the hurling is going to get coverage as the week goes on, you know what I mean? And it's just like, and then also it's like, it's happening in 6 days, you know, and I just think just a little bit of breathing room would just do nobody any harm. People getting tickets, how are Armagh going to organise the like Killarney?
Yeah,
in 6 days, like, you know, especially since we started doing home and away, that's become much more difficult as well, like, you know.
Definitely. Yeah.
Anyway, I've gone off on one. We talk a bit about Ger Brennan.
Yeah, because he was, of course, speaking about the controversy, shall we say, a couple of weeks ago. Brennan, of course, banned for an incident and an altercation involving contact with Galway's strength and conditioning coach during that league match at the end of March. Donegal boss Jim McGuinness did seem to escape punishment for what some considered a similar infraction at halftime of their win over Kerry earlier in the championship. Jarlett Burns, the GAA president, described those comparisons between the two incidents as irrational. And Brennan then hit back with criticism of that statement in comments in a statement released through his solicitor. Brennan spoke yesterday after Dublin's win against Cavan.
No, look, on that, lads, I issued a statement through my solicitor last week. I don't have a whole lot more to kind of add to it, Colm, other than to thank again the people who support me behind the scenes and all of yourselves, to be fair to you, in terms of common sense being applied. So, to be fair to Jarlett Burns, he did ring me last week. We had a lovely conversation on the phone. It was sincere, honest, and he apologised. I accepted it, and we move on concentrating the football from my point of view. And then the Congress is the opportunity to try to avoid something happening.
Just to clarify,
again.
Jarlett.
Ger Brennan speaking there after that match against Cavan yesterday. Just on to rugby finally, Mick. Andrew Porter ruled out of the big decider at Croke Park for Leinster this Friday night. The Ireland international sustained a calf knock during that semi-final win against the Stormers. Caelan Dorris and Dan Sheen could still make it. Their fitness will be assessed later in the week. And the Irish women's rugby team will travel to South Africa this autumn for their first ever tour there. It'll be part of the WXV Global Series and there will be two tests on October 21st, 24th and 31st. While Munster have set up a pre-season friendly against Leicester Tigers at Virgin Media Park in Cork. That takes place on Friday, September 18th.
Okay, great stuff, Steve-O. Thanks a million for that. Thanks a million to Arthur. We will be back after 8 o'clock with some Gaelic football. We're going to have Ciarán Murta and Aidan McGee to talk about all those games that we just mentioned. Unbelievable weekend. After 9 o'clock, Ben will be in with us. He's been at the Cape Verde watch party in Talla. So let's hear from that. We'll have Henry Winter on as well. Talk about the World Cup. We'll also keep an eye on Egypt versus Belgium, which is just about to kick off. Before we get to all that, though, let's do the catch.
The News Round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.